In a lobby, a man in his 30s with pulled back braids rubs his hands together. He stares nervously ahead. His leg twitches and shakes as he sits on the edge of a sofa.
She'll see you now.
He stands and follows the receptionist.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Josh Johnson!
Text. Peacock Original. Mirrored Rorschach patterns fill the screen in rainbow colors. They form the silhouette of Josh's head. Title, Up Here Killing Myself. In a dark office full of framed degrees, Josh sits in therapy. A woman holds a notebook.
So tell me what's on your mind.
Thanks for making time for me, by the way. I feel very lucky to be here.
Josh stands on stage.
I actually grew up pretty poor, and I grew up poor in Louisiana, which somehow feels extra poor. There's something about being poor next to a swamp that makes you go, oh, I might not make it out of this shit. Okay. These might be insurmountable circumstances. Because when you're poor, you get the worst of everything, which makes sense because you have no money. But because you're a poor kid, you're finding out it's the worst of everything one thing at a time. Like every new experience is the worst. Like, I still remember the first time I ever got rushed to the hospital. I was very young. I got a huge gash down my arm. I was losing a lot of blood. And so they rushed me to the hospital, but the closest one was still in a really bad part of town. And they put me in front of the doctor, and I'm screaming, and I'm bleeding, and I'm crying. And the doctor's like, hey, buddy, it's okay. It's okay. Just show me what's wrong. And so I showed the doctor my arm, and the doctor went, ugh, that's not a good doctor. That's not a good doctor at all. I'm pretty sure the entire point of medical school is for, ugh, not to be your prognosis. He almost went, ugh, nigga. It almost came out of his mouth. He caught it, but I heard it. You know what I mean? He choked at the end, but heard where he was going. This is a bad hospital. This is a bad doctor. We need to leave. I will bleed out before all these people money. When you don't have money, it affects everything. Like, I didn't even get good cereal till I was 20. My cereal was very poor. To get my cereal, you had to go to a discount grocery store and you had to look at the bottom shelf. And on the bottom shelf was just a bag. My cereal had no box. My cereal was homeless, okay? It was just a 20-gallon bag with no seam. They made the cereal. They bagged it up, and they were like, nobody would ever eat this, right? Like, there's no reason. Make way even a spout. You had to slice the bag open like a pirate to get the cereal out. And it wasn't even a cereal you'd recognize. It wasn't even Fruit Loops. My cereal was a knockoff of a knockoff of a knockoff. My cereal was just called Circles, all right? It had no other name, not even colored circles, just circles. So you take the cereal home, you slice the bag open, you pour the cereal into the bowl. And look, I don't know what your life is like. I don't know if you grew up with money or poor or with circles. But if you did, you know that when you pour the milk in, circles don't give a damn about milk. It all floated. How does it all float? That is poorer than physics, all right? I had to push the circles down with my hand to get all the cereal wet. And then I bit into it and the shit is glass, all right? It's just glass and cereal form. My mama asked me how it tastes. I was like milk and blood, all right? These are terrible circumstances we're living in. Like, my neighborhood, growing up, we even have a good pharmacy. The pharmacy in my hometown had no counter.
He shrugs and shakes his head.
I'll say it again since it didn't bump you. The pharmacy had no counter. You realize a counter is the only thing stopping a drugstore from being a dope house? When you went to the pharmacy in my neighborhood, there was no counter. It was just one dude standing in front of all the drugs like, what do you want? We don't do receipts. This is terrible. That's the thing, is that when you don't have money, especially when you don't have money in America, it takes a toll. because most of your problems stem from one problem that you can't do anything about, especially when you're a kid. And I think that some of that trauma can, it can really latch on to you. And for me, I don't think it did, because I can only speak for myself, but I just think that a lot of trauma is funny. Obviously not all of it. But I, okay, I can tell I'm losing you. So I'll give you an example. There was one year where money was very tight. It was especially tight around my birthday.
He grins.
And so they just didn't tell me I turned 10. They were like, no, let's wait till we can have a party with some press. So I just stayed 9. But I had friends, so I was going to my friends' birthday parties and everything, and finally I had to go to my mom and be like, Mom, all my friends turning 10, why am I not turning 10? And my mom looked at me, and she went,
Josh touches his chest, then looks away.
You go at your own pace, baby, all right? Don't compare yourself to other people, okay? You're going to turn 10 when it's time. I once heard someone say that having money's not everything. Not having it is.
Josh shakes his head.
You rarely hear anything truer than that. Because when you have money, or you at least have enough of it, you realize that money's not really there. You know what I mean? All it is a representation of the resources you have available to you. So we treat each other pretty poorly to get it sometimes, and we even judge each other by how much of it we have, but it's not really there. But when you don't have money, it's very real. You know, it's hard to be a philosopher on an empty stomach. It's why, to this day, I still remember my first visit from the Tooth Fairy. Right? I was really little. I just lost my first tooth. I did everything I was supposed to do. Put the tooth under my pillow, went to bed. And my grandma really wanted to spoil me because I was the first grandbaby in like a long time. And so that night, she went to my bed. She took my tooth and she put a $10 bill under my pillow. Right? This was $10 for my tooth. My mom was furious. She was like, that's not sustainable, all right? We don't have $10 per tooth money in this household, okay? His teeth are gonna start depreciating in value, and he won't know why. We're gonna have to lie to him and tell him that the tooth fairy broke. Do you see you've made his fancies poor now? But I didn't care about any of that. I woke up, I was blown away. $10, it was the most money I had ever seen at one time, okay? I don't even know who this dude is. $10 for one tooth, next one already loose. And so I got to thinking like, wow, if I save up enough of these, I can buy my own Lego set, right? I won't have to ask my parents for anything, because here's the thing, when you're a kid, and you ask your parents for something that they would love to give you, but they have to say no because they don't have the money, that shit hurts. And you don't get it. You don't fully understand because you're a kid. But you know something's wrong, and I never want to make my mom and dad feel like that. I even got to thinking, if I save up enough of these, I can just give the money to my mom and help her with the rent because she's always stressed about it. And I was thinking about all this when across from me, I was sitting outside of my house, and across from me, there's no polite way to say this. Across from me on the sidewalk, there was a crackhead that was dancing, right? But he wasn't dancing to any music, just to the rhythm of the crack. Just,
He shimmies.
Right? And as I looked up at him dancing, I saw a tooth fall out of his head. And so I, being a young entrepreneur, approached him and was like, sir, I just noticed that you lost a... technically it landed on my property, but I want to be respectful to you. I was wondering if you wouldn't mind parting... You already parted with it. But I'm wondering if you would let me have your tooth. And then he said...
Josh dances, licks his lips, and stares.
Yes, sir, if I could have the tooth, that would help me out a lot. And he was like...
He dances and rubs his chest.
Give it to you for $5.
And I was like, ugh, three. And so then I paid the man and went about my way, because in my head, I'm about to flip this anyway. You know what I mean? Take money to make money, right? And so then that night, I put the tooth under my pillow. I had sweet dreams of Lego sets and paid rent. And when I woke up, there was a grown man's tooth under my pillow. I was furious. I was so angry. And this is the thing. I know I'm the only one that thinks this, but I actually think that we should teach kids to curse, all right? Because one, they're going to learn anyway, okay? And two, one of the things that can make kids unbearable sometimes is they don't have the words to express how they're feeling, right? Like, if I woke up and saw the tooth and known the word damn, I would have just said damn and been done with it, right? But because I'm little and I don't know any curse words, I was stomping around the house just like, ooh! You know that? You know, like when you little and you get stiff leg? Ooh!
He stomps with his legs straight.
And my mom saw me and she grabbed me. She was like, baby, what's wrong? And I was like, because you know you can't talk when you little and you that bad. My mom was like, calm down. Tell me what's wrong. Use your words. And I was like, I put a tooth under my pillow last night. The tooth fairy didn't come. You're supposed to give me a promise that she owed me money. This is crazy. And my mom was like, you lost another tooth already? And I was like, no. So then she had to go see. So she walked to my bed. She flipped over my pillow.
Josh laughs as he mimes picking up a tooth.
She went, Nick.
He jerks back like the doctor.
And then she grabbed the tooth and she was like, where did you get this? I'm like, from the man. She's like, what man? Because in my mom's mind, there's like a grown man out there selling teeth. Which, I mean, she wasn't wrong. She wasn't far off. He did sell me the teeth out of his mouth.
At therapy.
Do you feel like having less as a child affected your outlook on life?
Well, it just hurts, you know? Because when you're poor, all you want to be is not.
On stage.
You know? Doesn't even matter why you're poor. I remember, didn't have money in Louisiana, moved to Chicago, was somehow poor. And then now, living in New York is the first time in my life that I'm actually doing all right. I'm very blessed. I feel good about life. You know? But I'm not going to lie to you. Now that I'm not poor, I think I want to be rich. I think that's how this whole thing works, you know? You have two meals a day your whole life, and then you finally have three. You're like, shoot, how about four? Let's get it. I want to be so rich that I actually say, more money, more problems. Never had to use the phrase before. I want to be so rich, I get gout. If you don't know what gout is, it's when your joints are like, we too rich. Stop it. I want to be so rich, I get in a yacht accident. Just my yacht and somebody else's yacht run right into each other. And as I'm going down with the ship, I'm like, mo money, no problems.
In therapy.
Let's jump ahead a little bit. How do you feel about the direction your life is going in now?
Josh's smile slowly fades. On stage.
It almost feels like we're the stepchildren of history. You know? Global pandemic. Potential world war. All in a few years. It's so bad, I don't even let my grandparents talk shit to me anymore, you know? I really don't. They're like, back in my day. I'm like, back in your day, you could go outside. Don't do that. I actually don't even give them credit for still being alive and also going through this thing, because I'm like, this is a party you about to leave. I have to stay. I mean, COVID alone, look at COVID. Killed millions of people around the world. They're gone. We lost millions of people. COVID took millions of lives, and it still didn't manage to kill the right people. Like, isn't that wild? Isn't that kind of crazy? Like, anytime you meet an asshole for the next 5 years of your life, a part of you is going to be like, really? You may? Okay. Whatever. COVID killed millions of people, but somehow everyone that I owe money lived. You know what that feels like? You know how many loans I held off on? Because I was like, he been sick anyway. Let's just see.
Josh stands on stage.
I was in Georgia. I was in Atlanta visiting my family for Thanksgiving. This is November of 2020, right? And it was four of us in the car. It was my aunt driving, my mom sitting passenger, me sitting behind my aunt, and my girlfriend sitting next to me. And we get pulled over, but we get pulled over from, like, the light. Like it flashes green, and then we just hear, whoop, whoop. I'm like, that's not even time enough to do anything illegal. So we pull over, and my aunt rolls down the window. Cop walks up to the window, and my aunt already has her lights out, because, you know, black people, we stay ready. So. So she hands the cop her license, and she's like, I'm sorry, like, was I speeding or, you know, something. I don't know how you speed from a green, but, you know, like, was I speeding something? And he bent down, and he looked at us, and he said, you have too many people in the car. So he said, you have too many people in the car. And he walked back, and I'm not going to lie, I Googled it. I was just like, maybe, who knows? You know, it's 2020, we in COVID. I don't know if there's something, you know. We can fit five. We're technically riding light. Like, how? We have too many people. And then while he's gone, my mind is just racing. It's just thinking about all the ways that this could go wrong, you know. And I was so nervous. I was genuinely afraid, not just for myself, but for the women around me. And he finally walks back up to the window. And he's been gone a long time, by the way. And he leans into the window. He hands my aunt back her license. And he says, on behalf of Newton County, we'd like to present you and your family with this butterball turkey. Happy Thanksgiving. And in my head, I'm like, why'd you do it like that? That's what is wrong with you? I thought we were all going to jail. Everybody knows the longer the cop is gone, the more jail you're going to. What took you so long? Did you forget where the turkeys were?
I'm not gonna lie. I actually think that what happened was he had my aunt's license, and they went to grab the turkey, and then the license fell between the seats, and he was like, "It's always something."
He mimes digging between the seats, his fingers flicker and claw.
And so then he passes the turkey to my aunt. She passes the turkey to me.
Josh's eyes widen and dart side to side.
I'm just sitting there with it, looking at it, and in my head, I'm like, there better not be any crack in this. And then we drive off, and, whew, I'm not going to lie. Police have messed with me before, but, like, this is the worst thing that a cop has ever done to me. Because in a year where all of my friends are out protesting, and we're sitting around in Brooklyn around a table telling stories about getting their ass beat at protests like civil rights leaders, I got to be the one to be like, yeah, and sometimes they give you turkeys you don't even want. Day before Thanksgiving, how's it gonna defrost in time? That's terrorism. I've been having a really weird time because it was at the end of last year that I realized I'm a little bit older right now than my parents were when they had me. And that feels crazy. Feels insane to especially check the markers of where they were when they were my age, where I am now. That, like, I even feel like an adult. A kid called me sir last week to get my attention. I almost punched him right in the throat. I was like, don't put that evil on me. I'm also scared to have kids because I live in New York. You know, like, I get that it's beautiful and iconic, but also the rats have personality. Like, it's a jarring place to live. I'll give you my best example of why I'm scared, right? There was a while back where I was on the subway. I don't even remember where I was headed, but things were going well. You know, I was listening to a podcast. I was having a good day, right? And I remember I was sitting on the train, and as I was sitting down, this dude got on the train and sat across from me, and this guy is crazy. Okay. Now, I know you're not supposed to say that. I know that's dismissive. But personally, I feel like political correctness works in proximity to the problem. Okay? If I'd been watching this dude in a documentary, I'd be like, he is an individual having an episode. All right? But because he is 4 feet away from me, he is crazy. Okay? And he's being crazy right now. My man is sitting down having a very specific argument with somebody that nobody can see. All right? And he's not even looking across at me. He's looking down, so it's kind of like a little gremlin or something. And it's not even the type of argument you can interject in. He's just like, I ate all of the Jell-O, all right? So that's happening. And as that's happening, the emergency doors open, which is never good. No emergency doors ever open anywhere, and people were like, what's about to happen? That's always bad. Hence the name. And this dude comes through the door, and look, out of respect, I will use politically correct term for him because he had a different situation than the first dude. This guy is fucking crazy, okay? This guy couldn't be crazier. First of all, he came through the door sideways, which is a strong choice. I've been walking through doors all my life, and I've been just doing it front ways. Like, I had no idea. I guess I'm just vanilla like that. Like, I've been walking through doors missionary and everything this whole time. But my man walked in the door sideways, making weird noises, doing Michael Jackson moves and stuff. My man came in the door just like, nonstop, okay? And not busking for money. This is coming out of his spirit, all right? Just nonstop. Okay, also should point out, no shirt, no shoes, no socks, just pants fly open. And the only reason this man's pants hadn't fallen to the ground was because he had a big booty and a big dick, all right? My man's pants are hanging off for dear life. He just... This dude is so fucking crazy that the crazy guy stopped being crazy. Crazy dude was sitting there like, I ate all of the Jell-O. Ugh.
Y'all see him with his dick out like that? Isn't that nasty? Starts commiserating with us. I'm like, this is how we felt about you. This is wild. That's why I don't feel bad calling him crazy, because it's clearly not a permanent situation. He see dick and he lose it. And the reason that I'm scared to have kids isn't because of the crazy guy. It's not because of the fucking crazy guy. It's because while all of this was going down, there was a kid on the train that barely reacted. Crazy dude got in, sat down, and was like, I ate all of the Jell-O. And then little man next to me, could be more than 8 years old, was sitting there reading a Captain America comic, looked at him and was like, that'll work itself out. And then the fucking crazy guy got on like, just like, let's see what the Red Skull is up to. Like, I don't know if I should more scare the crazy guy, the fucking crazy guy, or the kid. You should only be that stoic if you've seen combat, all right? And it only happened at the end of last year, so I still think about where that kid is all the time. He's probably on a playground right now, just putting out a cigarette on his own hand.
He smirks as he presses into his palm.
I've seen things.
So, yeah. Maybe I'm afraid of having kids.
Can you tell me what scares you so much about parenthood? Are you afraid you won't be a good father?
In therapy.
Do you remember when you believed in grown-ups?
On stage.
Do you remember that? Remember when you were little and you were like, the big people, they know. And then you got older and you were like, fuck, nobody knows. This is terrible. Someone should do something. You remember the first time you looked at a grown-up and you were like, I don't think you know what you're doing. For me, it was my dad. Yes! That first tooth, back when it was just loose, I went to my dad and I told him. My dad was always excited to do like a milestone thing, like a dad thing, right? Something special. That's a moment that he's watched his friends have and now he's having with me. I walked up to him. I told him that my tooth was loose. He got so excited, he ran out of the room. And he ran back in the room with a length of string. And he tied one side of the string to my tooth and one side of the string to the doorknob, but didn't tell me what the plan was. So then he slammed the door, but he put too much string in my mouth, so we just watched the door slam. And I mean, I put it together what he was trying to do as soon as the door slammed, and I looked down with string still in my mouth, and I was like, sir, there's string on the floor. You didn't measure anything. I don't think you're a grown-up at all, sir. I don't even know why I'm calling you sir. I don't think you're a grown-up, dude.
Josh stands on stage.
I will say, I feel bad, because sometimes you share a thing, and... All right, so... My friend... My friend got in a car accident, right? And he was not okay, okay? But he got in a car accident with an ambulance. Like, what better car accident is there to get in? You know what I mean? Like, but it turns out if you get in a car accident with an ambulance, the ambulance driver go get out and react like anybody else you could have gotten in a car accident. Because the ambulance driver got out and was like, fuck!
And it went to my friend's window. He's like, you couldn't see me? I'm bigger than you. You couldn't see. My friend was not okay. We knew he was concussed immediately because he hit his head on impact and was so disoriented that he threw up on the windshield past the steering wheel and was so confused he still turned on the windshield wipers.
He wobbles.
It was like, it's not working. I don't know why it's not. So finally, the ambulance driver comes back to his window. He's like, but are you okay? Like, is everything all right? And my buddy's like, oh, no, I hit my head. This is bad. And the ambulance driver went, oh! And then made my friend sit on the hood while he checked his eyes with the little flashlight, having a nervous breakdown out loud. Like, he was like, I was about to fucking quit today. This is bullshit. And my friend was like, oh, this is bad. Something bad happened. Should we call somebody? And he was like, look, you call them, they gonna call me, all right? I'm already here. Let's figure this out together, okay? Just get in the back. Because getting hit by an ambulance must be a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, help's already there, but on the other, they're gonna blame it on you. Because then they got to the hospital, and my friend was like, yeah, he came out of nowhere. And the ambulance driver was like, don't listen to that Poe thing. He concussed. You don't know what he's saying right now.
Hold on a minute. You think it was funny that your friend was hurt?
No.
In therapy.
It's not funny that my friend was hurt. It's a circumstance that's funny. It's ironic, right? Jeez, you can really tell that we've sucked all the joy out of the world that the simple act of laughing at something seems malicious. Laughter is a means to process. I thought that was your whole thing. It's a way to exhale hurt. Like, some people cry, some people sigh, some people scream, and I laugh.
Josh paces on stage.
I remember the first time someone paid me money to do stand-up. I was so excited. I was blown away. It was going to be the most money I had ever made. There was this place that was going to pay me $1,000 to go out there and do a show. And I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a prank. And I remember, I was like my heart was racing. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm really doing it. I'm going to be a comedian that gets paid, right? That doesn't just bother people. And I remember I didn't even want to buy a flight because I didn't want to cut into the money that I was going to get. And so then I looked up a bus. And this is how you could tell I was 22 at the time. Because I looked up the bus. It was going to take 2 days. I was like, that's not even that bad. You know what I mean? Like, that's pretty good. Like, for $60, I could do it. I could swing it. You know? I ain't got nowhere to be. And being on a bus for 2 days will change you. In a way that you are not ready for. Because I remember I showed up to the bus coy. I walked in, I was like, oh my God, he's got a tattoo on his nose. By the end of the trip, I was one passing out sandwiches, calling people sweetie and stuff. And I remember we were a day into the trip, and there was a guy next to me that was sleeping, and it wasn't good sleep. You know that sleep where somebody, like his face, he fell asleep, but his face is pressed against the glass, just sliding down. You know that sleep that you know that when they wake up, their neck's gonna hurt? He was sleeping like that. I'm not gonna lie, he looked dead. Like, I was very scared he was dead. And I wanted to touch him, but I was like, I don't even think I'm prepared for what touching a dead body will do to my psyche. After 26 hours on this bus. And so I'm sitting there for a while, I'm listening to music and stuff, and out of nowhere, from his sleep, with the power and strength of a grown man, he fully shit his pants. And so immediately I jump up to the other side, the other aisle, and I scream, right? And I'm trying to hold it in, but I scream like a bitch. I really did. I don't even know if I could really hit that note again if I try. And so other people see me, they see me scream, they see why I scream, and then they also jump to the other side. And everyone on that side jumped to the other side so fast that not in a cartoonish way, not like an action movie, but the bus did tip for a second. Like, I was like, this can't be how I die. Because he gonna land on me. And so the bus tipped for a second and then it bounced back, and he was fully awake. He didn't know what was happening. He was just, his eyes, I've never seen fear like that before. And then he ran to the bathroom, which the bathroom on a bus is not a bathroom. It's a place where you stand and pee. But from the bathroom, we heard him go, no, 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 no!
Josh laughs.
A while back, when I was in New York, this is like early to me living there, I got a phone call that genuinely changed my life. I've actually never been the same since. I got a call that my dad was sick, right? And when your parents call, sometimes you don't have time. Like you have time, but you don't make time. And my mom happened to call me ahead of him and was like, hey, your dad's going to call you. Make sure you answer because he doesn't sound good. And he's headed to the hospital. And so I pick up, and I'm so genuinely grateful. I feel incredibly blessed to have two things that happened in that time. One is I got to talk to my dad on the phone. I got to tell him that I loved him. I got to hear his voice again. Because he was driving himself to the hospital because he didn't feel good. He felt really bad. And I'm glad that my mom called to make sure that I picked up, because I think I'd be even a different version of the person I am now if I didn't pick up that phone when he called. And he was really sick and it was really sudden. But the second thing that I'm so thankful, so blessed that I got to do was I got to get on a plane and rush home and be with him before he died. I got to hold his hand. I got to talk to him. I got to say goodbye, right? Because once again, I don't think I would be this version of me if it had just been that sudden and just immediate. And I never got to tell him I loved him again in person, on the phone, hear his voice, remember what that was like. And I didn't even clean out the house or anything after the funeral, because I had what I still kind of feel like was the perfect excuse, because I was working at Tonight Show at the time. I'd barely been hired. And so in my head, I was like, I have to get back because this is helping pay for what's at home. You know, I'm able to take care of my mom, take care of the family with the money that I make from this, right? But deep down, I don't even know if I could have done it if I didn't have that job. And I remember a week after he passed, I was back in New York. And I was at a party, and I felt like a piece of shit for being at a party a week after my dad died. And I'm not even partying, by the way. I just don't want to be at home alone. I just don't want to be alone with my thoughts about the fact that I can't call my dad. And I'm at this party, and by the way, I don't drink or smoke, so I'm just being sad and sober at a party, which is a genuine attack on everyone. And out of nowhere, I start to cry. And when someone's grieving, we always put our focus on the person grieving, the individual grieving, how they're handling, how they're processing. But we don't talk about enough is that it's actually the people around you that lift you out of that. And no one really gives them enough props and care and attention. And they don't want to say anything because you're the one that went through something, you know? But I was crying at that party, and it's when I realized that grieving, the process of grieving, is almost identical to shitting your pants on a bus. Because it's something that happened to you that we all have to deal with. Because I'm at this party and I'm crying, and I don't even realize I'm crying until a guy taps me on my shoulder. He's like, you're in front of the fridge.
And then I ran, because I could feel another wave coming. And it's uncontrollable when it hits you like that. There's nothing you can do. And so I ran to the bathroom. And from the bathroom, people could hear me go, no, 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 no.
Josh stands on stage.
I do feel like, as a society, we don't give weird people enough credit. Like, we always act like weird people are happening to us. I'm guilty of it, too. I live in New York. Maybe one day I have to go to a high rise. There's too many flights of stairs to take it up, so I take the elevator, and there's only one other dude on the elevator, and he weird. And then I get in, and I hit 19 on the elevator, and he hits 20. I'm like, this is about to be a journey. All right. But I'm trying to be more empathetic because, like, I think, truly, that all of us, no matter who you are, we're all doing the best we can with what we have. Everybody. It's not an excuse. Sometimes that's very sad. Sometimes, like, that's your best? Oh, no. But it's true. We're all doing our best as much as we can, which means when you meet a weird person, they could have been weirder. You know? Like, maybe they did walk up to you, just start talking about fish and stuff like that, but they could have walked up like, oh. I'm also trying to be more empathetic because I'm weird. I'm like a weird guy. You know? Like, if we hung out after this, you'd be like, he off. Like, it's a thing that I know about myself. I'll give you my best example. I used to work at a grocery store, and when I worked there, I worked with a guy who was very weird. Like, deeply. It was never malicious, but it was always very weird. Like, he would just microwave fish in the break room and then eat it in front of all of us like he wasn't a terrorist. And so then I became his friend, because I've never been more sure someone was going to shoot up a store than when I saw him hit 5 minutes on some Atlantic salmon. I'm like, he probably got that gun on him right now. I got to play my cards right. Because in my mind, if we're friends, that means the day he shoots up the store, he's going to be like, Josh, get out of here.
He cocks a shotgun.
Like, all right, my man, okay. I told y'all I should have been nice to him. That's all y'all. And so we become friends, genuine friends. And then one day he calls me, and he's like, hey, Josh, I would love for you to come have dinner with me and my family, which I was very excited about. Because if we're out here having dinners together, that means he going to call me the day before he shoot up the store. I'm like, Josh, don't come in Thursday. It's going down. So I roll up to the house, and I'm willing to be wrong. I am. But to my knowledge, there's only two handshakes that you use to greet people. All right? There's a traditional handshake, you know, open palm, and then there's the fist bump. Hey, how you doing? This man opened the door, looked me in my eyes, extended his arm, and didn't do either one. He just did this. What is this?
He puts his palm out facing forward.
What the hell is happening right now? This is the craziest thing that I've ever seen, all right? You can't even high-five this. You'll miss. What is this? This is absolute insanity. This is not a handshake. This is how you feed a horse when you're scared. What is this? And I didn't know what to do, but I didn't want to be rude, and so I just pinched it like a crab on the side and started going up and down like that.
Josh winces as he mimes a limp handshake.
And here's the thing. The social contract with a pound is that it's a moment in time. You know? It's a, hey, what's up? What's good with you? How you doing? Right? The social contract with a handshake is that we both extend our hand, we give each other a firm grip, and then when you start to let go, I know to let go. Right? But because this is nothing but let go, I don't know when to let go. So I'm just doing this for what feels like a day. And he's just taking it. He's just letting me do it. He's like, Yes, this is right. This pleases me. And I'm not gonna lie, it made me see my friend in an entirely different light. Cause when this is your dad, maybe Michael Wayman some fish isn't that crazy. Maybe he's just doing the best he can with what he has. I'm also trying very hard to be accepting of, maybe not just accepting, like happy when things are fine. We always want things to be great. Fine is pretty great, because it could be bad. I understand that we all want life to be great all the time, but it's not going to be great. If it can at least be good most of the time, that's great. Got to appreciate how fine is amazing. That's what gratitude is. That's the basis of it, you know? I especially apply it in dating. Because I'm fine. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not amazing, but I'm here. I love dating somebody, like, right after they dated somebody that was trash. Because I'm just fine. But I look amazing. You can always tell you dated a woman right after she dated somebody that was trash, because all of her compliments aren't compliments. You know? I went on a date and she was like, oh my God, mustard and ketchup?
He nods and smiles.
Oh, I went on a date one time. At the end of the date, I was like, I had a great time. I hope you did too. And I could tell that there was just a veil. Like, she wasn't actually talking to me. She was just thinking out loud. She's like, oh, I had a good time too. And I'm just glad you got all your teeth. I was like, what did you just say? Teeth? And she's like, I was getting so sick of soup. I was like, soup? She said I had all my teeth. Man, what have you been through?
My God, you talk about teeth a lot.
In therapy.
I do. Because I try very hard, as I'd like to believe.
On stage.
Everybody does, to love everybody the same. No matter what, at least give people a chance. You know, and especially not have a prejudice against a person because they're a member of a group, because you can't help what groups you're in. But I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not perfect. Some groups are very hard to get along with. You're not supposed to say that now, but it's true. Some groups just suck. Middle schoolers are the worst people on the entire planet. Like, why are they this mean? They are so mean. I didn't do anything to... Middle schoolers make you forget that you're not in middle school, you know? Like, I have a life and a girlfriend, and that all melts away when you're like the dude with those shoes. Middle schoolers are the worst because they're just adult enough to be mean, but just young enough to have the innocence of a child and the honesty, right? So whatever they say to you, don't get in here.
Josh points to his heart.
Okay, as just so you know about me, I, no matter the situation, no matter the occasion, I always wear pants. All right? I always wear pants because I got skinny legs. Okay? I don't need people knowing that the knee is the thickest part. That's not sexy. Okay? My legs, ankle size all the way up. That's not hot. I look like a bird in my underwear. Especially when I get itchy.
He scratches his leg with his foot, standing like a flamingo.
And so I always wear pants, except for one day. There was one day, I don't know what it was. I was feeling myself. I was happy. I own a pair of shorts, so I threw them on. You know, I was like, let's make these bird legs the world's problem. You know what I'm saying? So I left the house happy, strutting, until I passed a middle school. And these little monsters clocked me from far away. Hey, you know somebody about to say something mean when they smile first. They saw me down the street and they were like...
He leans to the side and grins.
And so I, not wanting to be victim to their taunts, decided to run. Which didn't help my case, because running skinny legs look like skinnier legs. There's less leg to see now. And it was two of them. And one of them leaned over like he was going to whisper to his friend, but then he yelled out at me. He was like, "Hey, slow down. You want them matchsticks to catch on fire." And then his friend, who was in a wheelchair, by the way, his friend in the wheelchair was just like, "Damn, I thought my legs were messed up." They're terrible people, and it shouldn't be illegal to hit them.
Josh grins on stage.
I'm not supposed to talk about this, but what else is this for then, you know? I have a stalker, and it's actually been really scary. It's like, it's this person, I don't know what the issue is. I'm not a doctor. I can't tell you what's going on, but I will say that, like, they have it in their head that they're me. So then anytime I, like, post or have, like, a life event happen, they get really upset, and they just send me, like, nonstop death threats, right? And it's, like, really scary stuff. Like, you're going to bleed. I know where you are. I'm going to get to you. You're going to die, right? And I don't know. It's like, a tough thing, because when you're in this situation, especially when it's a person's delusion, you're actually not supposed to, like, talk about it in a big way, because then any engagement with it actually fuels the delusion. So then it can just get worse. But that's an incredibly isolating feeling, and you're isolated while you're scared. It's horrible. And I remember we called the like cops about it, and they were like, "Well, you know, these death threats are coming like via fake accounts and everything, and until they do something, there's nothing we can do. So your life is just different now." They did. They were like, "Well, you look, when you're walking at night, you may want to have like an earbud out. Just be aware of your surroundings at all times. If you feel threatened, like, I don't know, maybe put a key in between your fingers or something when you're walking at night. Like, just always be aware of where you are and who's around you. Exits, just, you have to start assessing situations." And it's crazy, because now, because of this, I have to be as careful as, like, any woman. Even like a famous guy, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not even like a superstar, but I got just famous enough that it's like I have big titties or something. Like, I gotta be very careful when I move through these streets. And I don't know, this is gonna sound conceited, but I thought that, like, if I never wanted anything like, but if something like this was to happen, I thought I'd be further along in my career, you know what I mean? Like, because then they asked me straight up, they were like, "Do you have money for, like, a personal security detail?" And I was like, "No!" I remember what I said, "No." I was like, "Ooh." "Oh, they probably gonna get you then. I'm sorry."
It really changed my relationship with people.
He sits in therapy.
You know, it's interesting that you had that experience, because I don't think enough men really understand what women go through on a date.
I think I should buy a gun.
On stage.
I don't have a gun. Like, I don't like guns. I don't really... It's not even a political thing. I'm not like, "Have you seen the stats?" Like, I just, as Josh, don't like guns, right? And I don't like guns because I grew up in Louisiana. And when I was in the sixth grade, they wanted to teach us about the history of combat. And so they took the whole sixth grade class on a field trip to a shooting range. Right. Which I know sounds crazy to say, but, like, you have to understand, in Louisiana, shooting is required reading, all right? We were going to learn sooner or later. And every kid got to shoot one arrow with a bow and arrow, and they got to shoot one round from a rifle, right? And the rifle is, like, screwed into the wall and locked in, okay? It's not like a school shooter's dream, all right? It's not like a kid was going to grab the rifle, like, "Finally!" If he could have ripped it out of the wall, he could have killed us with his bare hands.
And I remember I shot the arrow and it sailed through the air, but I couldn't like Robin Hood it, you know? Like I even hit the sack, but then it flopped and it fell and I was a little embarrassed. So I wanted to do a really good job with the rifle. And so it was my turn. The rifle was racked up low, so I had to get down on one knee. I did everything that I was supposed to do. I put the stock in my shoulder. I looked through the sight at the target. I pulled the trigger. I felt the recoil knock me back and everything. And my first time shooting a gun was also my first boner. And I was like, that's not good. That's not good at all. I don't like this in the league. This is supposed to be for titties. I don't know what just happened just now. This is horrible. Because the worst part about getting your first boner from shooting a gun isn't finding out you're a psycho, right? It's that now I got to stand up and turn around in front of my whole sixth grade class, rock hard, okay? And every dude knows you're never harder than you are in middle school. That's the hardest you're going to be in your entire life. You slamming your dick in doors and not feeling it hard, you know what I mean? People wonder why middle school boys are so weird. It's because there's no blood going to the brain for like 3 more years. I was so hard when I looked down, I was like, I am a Republican. There is no way that I am not. You're so hard when you're in middle school. I mean, I shouldn't even say this, but I'm about to leave, so whatever. You're so hard when you're in middle school. I actually understand why some of those female teachers be fucking their students. Because it's like, she's never gonna get that level of dick again in life. It won't happen. That's our time. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening.
Josh walks off the stage.
This is the most important thing in the world.
Josh sits in therapy.
It's one of the last places they can be completely honest and get away with it. Like the deeper that I dig into this, the more I realize that it actually saved my life. Like, if I didn't have this, I probably would have killed myself a long time ago. It's a hard thing to admit because people look at you different after you say that. It's why you, just by being here, just by listening, saved my life. And I think I'd be remiss if I didn't at least take a second to say thank you.
He looks at us and smiles. Josh leaves the office. Outside, he walks down the sidewalk and gazes out at the street. He walks past a lively patio full of people. Josh stops and looks into the bar. He continues walking. Above him, a marquee reads, Josh Johnson, up here killing myself. Credits. Thank you. If you or someone you know is thinking of suicide, please call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 988.